exhausting. Welcome, birders, to Attu.
Only third and fourth people to ever hit 450 in a single year in Canada.
Exactly. I was so happy I hit 450. My first time I ever tried a big year was 1977. This had been brewing in me since 1977. I did a handful of projects, maybe four or five. We'll say two on the West Coast. It was early September off at Tofino. It was a fantastic one, where we short-tailed albatross, flesh-footed shearwater. Hurricane is a huge make-or-break. Fortunately, we found a gullbill tern and a lease tern.
Hello, birders. Welcome back to the Big Year Podcast.
I am really actually so excited for a second season. I was not sure that we would get renewed, but birds tweeted their approval and desired to hear even more from Big Year Birders. So here I am, and boy, do I have a great lineup of guests ready to share their stories. Over the course of the spring and summer, you will get to hear from Lynn Barber, one of the great ABA Big Year Birders and author of many books, including Extreme Birder, One Woman's Big Year, the story of her 2008 ABA Big Year. And she was the first person to break Sandy Comito's record with 723 species. I'll also be catching up with a couple of Ontario Big Year Birders, including Andrew Keaveney, who was doing his Ontario Big Year when I was a newbie birder doing an ABA Big Year in 2012, and Brett Forsyth, who did a self-powered Ontario Big Year in 2022 when I was doing my Canada Big Year. I doubt I'll ever try either of those, I can tell you that right now. We'll also be venturing out west to talk to Christy Martin, who did a big year in British Columbia, and Danny Bernard, who completed a Michigan big year a few years ago. But today, we have part one of my lengthy and wonderful chat with the new all-time record holder for a Canada Big Year, Bruce DeLabio. In 2022, I was only the third birder to ever top 457 species for Canada in a single year. He was hot on my tail during the second half of the year, and Bruce had already been birding and guiding for 50 years, pushed me until the final hours of the year. During 2022, though we birded in many of the same places, sometimes within hours and miles of each other, we never actually met. Finally, in the spring of 2023, when he was trying to break the all-time record, we met at Point Pelee National Park during spring migration. We talked about his spark bird on that occasion and his expectations for his own full-out big year. His initial hope was to hit at least 460. Knowing the birds I missed in 2022 and my lack of extensive coast-to-coast birding experience in Canada, not to mention his vast knowledge of the country and where and when to find the most species at the best times, he not only broke my record, but he zoomed way past 460, setting a record that may stand for a very, very long time indeed. I know records are made to be broken, I just never expected to be dethroned less than a year later. I take heart in the fact that, given my various physical disabilities, I even did get past 450. Now, we all bird for our own reasons, and a big year is a personal journey. The success you reap all depends on the passion for birding that you sow. So as winter turns to spring, and a birder's fancy turns to migration, and all the excitement of the return home of hundreds of snow birds from the south, let's catch up with the birders of the big year. No more words to that effect. I know. Stop talking and get on with the show. Welcome to my little podcast. I appreciate you coming on and helping me out. And it's been a couple of years since we first started crisscrossing Canada.
Yes.
Back in 2022, obviously, I was doing my big year, and you were either just ahead of me or just behind me in a lot of different places. And was that sort of, for you, a test run of your big year?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. I tried a big year, but unfortunately, COVID killed it off by the middle of March. You couldn't travel or anything. So in 2022, just my birding in general, I was covering a lot of Canada. And in the back of my mind, I still wanted to one day to do a full big year out of my system. And yeah, it just happened in 2022. I was just poking along. And by the fall, I had accumulated a reasonable tally of birds, and I saw you were doing the same. And like everything in life, I heard through the grapevine that you were doing a big year. Mm-hmm. But I just carried on through the end of 2022. And both of us did well. You did better. And it was great.
I was a little worried on the last few days of the year because at one point you weren't really in the picture. And then it felt like you had gone on a little bit of a run to in the back of my paranoid mind to catch me. And also, really, it was to be only third and fourth people to ever hit 450 in a single year in Canada.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was so happy I hit 450. And I don't know if you know the whole story, but I originally, my first time I ever tried a big year mm-hmm. was 1977.
Wow.
So this had been brewing in me since 1977. And as the decades went on, and back in 77, I was just a teenager mm-hmm. and it was hitchhiking, taking a bus, taking a train. I traveled around Canada. Nothing like nowadays on a plane and planes, trains, and automobiles. It was everything.
Yeah.
So 2022 was coming to an end. I talked to my wife. I said, listen, I'm going to be turning 65 in January. I want to get this out of my system. And that's what I did. And then I started off a slow start in 23. But yeah, that's how it all evolved. But it started with me back in 1977. And my first attempt, I had 358 species, which back then was a lot. Because very few people even were over 400 for their life in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And that is back in the day, as we both know, where there were very few rare bird alerts. There was no social media. There was no way to know within 5 days if something on the other side of the country showed up. And nowadays, you'll know within 15 minutes when a genuine rarity like a white wagtail shows up. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're fine. Yep.
That was, and it. I had to, over the course of 2022, develop some connections because right. I basically did it with zero real preparation, with only a few trips out west and a few here and there trips around Canada without really knowing the ins and outs of where and when I should be going for big years. My big year actually for Canada started as a idea that, you know what, COVID's going on and now I don't have any real work to do. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to just visit all the provinces and a couple of the territories and just say I birded in each one of those. And as 2021 was coming to an end, my mind started brewing and thinking, if I just do each province once, I might get a good list, but I'm hooked and addicted to big years. My birding started in 2012 with a North American big year, with having never held a pair of binoculars in my hand. And I thought maybe if I was lucky, I'd see 400 species. I didn't even think I could get 300, but then I got 400 and then I got 500. And then the last couple of months after my work season ended, I just went crazy and got myself up to 600. And that was the most amazing feeling to be able to do that. From the very beginning, leading up to that first attempt at a big year, how did your birding career evolve?
My interest in birds started back in kind of the latter part of the 60s. It was a slow start. Mm-hmm. It was with feeding birds. Mm-hmm. Then we had a cottage at Constance Bay, just outside Ottawa. We'd go up there for the summer, spend six weeks there. And again, it grew to birding the Constance Bay area and then visiting different habitats. And then I was fortunate, my family, we did family trips every summer. My dad took somewhere. I got to go like starting in 19, went to Algonquin Park and Silver Lake Provincial Park outside in Eastern Ontario back in the latter part of the 60s. But by 1970, we did a trip like to Nova Scotia. 71, we drove across to Vancouver. 72, Florida. In fact, the 72 trip in Florida, my parents let me lay out the itinerary so I could go to all the great birding spots, and we were camping. Mm. So, and this all it increased my knowledge, and then increased my knowledge of back in my hometown, Ottawa, back then, of what to look for, where to look for it, the habitat. And then it carried on. We drove to California. We drove to Newfoundland. All said and done, that was my exposure when I was a kid. And then by the time I was 14, there was no looking back. I want to say hardcore birder. Everything, all my time was put into birding. That was my focus. And it carried on. That's why by 77, I thought, yeah, I'd like to do, or during 76, mm-hmm. I read Ken Kaufman in the American Birding Association. I saw he had done a big year in 73 in North America. And I just figured, okay, Canada's big enough in Canada. And then, so that's how everything evolved. And Ottawa was, with the Canadian Museum of Nature here, we had Dr. Earl Godfrey, John Crosby, the artist, Stu McDonald, and many other people in the museum that were keen birders. And Godfrey put out the Birds of Canada in 1966, and that was like the Bible for Canadian birds. Mm-hmm. And then the edition came out in 1986. So I was put into a city that had lots of teenage birders, a lot of competition, fun competition. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of everything with me and birding, late 60s into the mid 70s.
And a lot of times it's the places birding takes you as much as it is the birds. And for you, you had seen a lot of Canada and you knew a lot of the places to go, but were there some places you had never been that doing this 2023 big year really got you to visit and go, wow, why haven't I never been here before?
Yeah, fortunately, one thing with all my birding and my job, I ended up guiding for 35 years or so. And so I had seen a lot of Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was also doing environmental surveys. I worked for the museum. So I got up into the Arctic and areas like that. But one spot I had never been to was Haida Gwaii. So last fall, I figured out, I'm going to go to Haida Gwaii, and it's like going to Pelee. You never know what you'll find. Anyway, went there and spent a week. It was fantastic. There was always something interesting to see. It was great, and I'm certainly going to go back to Haida Gwaii. But that was really one of the locations. Now, the other location that I went to was when the European blackbird showed up in Labrador. Mm-hmm. That, I made a special trip with a friend of mine, Alvin Buckley, and we went up to Labrador, and that was a fantastic experience. And fortunately, we got to see the European blackbird. But the biggest surprise on that trip was 10:30 at night, we're driving through the boreal forest, and a polar bear ran in front of them, right in front of the car and up the embankment. That was just incredible.
Those are the things you don't expect.
Now, over the decades, I've seen polar bears in the Arctic, and I've seen them at Churchill, but it's on the tundra. It's not in the middle of a boreal forest.
No, not at all. Those two places you mentioned are the missed opportunities for me, because the European blackbird showed up late in 2022, and I was a 12-hour drive away, but really it was a tough thing to have contemplated because I was by myself. I've never driven anywhere near there before. The weather forecast for the next 3 or 4 days was abysmal in terms of driving through blizzards and not having a companion to go up there with me. And I asked around to some of the people I knew in St. John's, and I couldn't get anybody to come up with me. I talked to the gentleman who knew about the bird, and he said, it's something that you really don't want to do on your own in this kind of weather. So I had to pass on that. That one was a tough one. And then Haida Gwaii, that was something I had planned early in the year that I was going to do a trip there. And one or two of the birds that I knew I could see in the nesting colony I got early in the winter in BC. And that sort of slipped my mind. And then I saw you went there and I thought, oh my God, you got birds that I should have been able to get if I had been smart enough to go there. What were some of the birds that you were able to get because you did that trip?
Hideaway? I ended up getting tailed sandpiper, tufted puffin, yellow-billed loon. I know there's one other. I can't think of it now, but there's something else I got. But these were also birds that, like pelagic birding on the West Coast, is to me one of the most important parts of the big year in Canada. There was a trip organized for April 8th off of Tofino, and we got out there and the conditions were just horrible and it was canceled and that was the end of that. And you can't just hang around and spend $200 or $250 a night on a hotel hoping the weather's going to change one of these days.
Yeah, well, I did the April pelagic out of Tofino as well, and we shouldn't have gone out, but we did, and almost everybody on the boat was sick. And it's not one of Debbie Shearwater's larger boats where you can go inside and warm up. It's just everybody's out in the open. You're wearing those giant orange flotation suits that aren't waterproof and don't keep you really warm. And I did get a number of birds that I needed for the big year, but I think I didn't do enough pelagics. One of the things that people have talked about in the early days of the big years when Sandy Comito was the guy everybody was chasing was thinking that to beat him, you had to get more and more pelagics and as many seabirds as possible. I think that's probably where I lost 4 or 5 species because I just didn't know about enough pelagics. I knew what you could get out of Tofino. I got the one, luckily, at the end of the year in New Brunswick. But yeah, how many pelagics did you take and how did that get you to a higher count?
Yeah, definitely. I did a handful of pelagics. Off the top of my head, I probably did 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5, but only, we'll say, 2 on the West Coast. But the late August one, or it was early September off at Tofino, was a fantastic one where we short-tailed albatross and then we got flesh-footed shearwater and buller shearwater. Just pretty well got all of the regulars and some very good ones. So that made a huge difference. And unfortunately, there was a second pelagic and I couldn't go on it. I had to be back in Vancouver and that's where I missed Lays and Albatross. So it happens. But I'll tell you one thing, the bottom line in you're doing a big year, there is a major cost involved. Depending how much money you have to spend, that is going to make a difference to a certain degree where you get to go and how many times you get to go there. And I looked at my year, though I ended up with 480, which I'm very pleased with. And when you're traveling into other areas, like I missed the Cassowary Kingbird, the day I left to fly out of Ottawa to go west, the Cassowary Kingbird showed up. And by the time I was back, it was gone. And the same with the tricolored heron, couple of reports where, you know, near Toronto and that, they showed up when I was heading out or they disappeared just before I got back. So these are sacrifices. You can't get them all.
Yes.
It was very important to get as many of the breeding species. And that's super important. But it's all about the rare birds.
Yes.
Rare birds. And after my pelagic trip, you know, I think it was like the September 9th or whatever, and I was in BC. Then I flew home on the 18th and got home at like midnight. My son picked me up, and that's when the hurricane was coming up the East Coast and going around Yarmouth. And he picked me up, and we drove 18 hours straight to the spot, changed it to a tropical storm. But hurricane is a huge make or break. Fortunately, we found a gullbill tern and a lease tern. But other than that, it was very disappointing. And I chased birds out at hurricanes in 2019 and then 2020. And between those two hurricanes, I had 7 or 8 species that I didn't see last year. And the other thing that's changed and you touched it a bit, but like in the 70s and 80s, up until the internet and social media, you would hear about birds. Could be days, depending on how you were connected. Mm-hmm. And then you'd sometimes hear within a day, or it could be a half a day. But now the big difference, eBird and Discord, those two things have totally changed everything. But you can go out for the rare bird, you still have to be able to find it. Mm-hmm. And you don't always find all these rare birds. I was fortunate in 2023. Out of everything I went and chased, I only actually missed two birds out of many species I chased. Mm-hmm.
That was one of the tougher pills to swallow, was that I flew all the way across the country for one bird and missed it, flew all the way back for another bird and missed it. I know of four birds that I just missed by a day, and that cost me. And yet there was so many times where I was just taking a random road in the middle of nowhere, and you pull up and there's a dusky grouse. And that was the only one I saw that year. And because I took that one road. But let's go back to late December and early January. What were you doing to plan ahead?
Yeah, my preparation was based on my experience, and my experience was over many decades. So I had a very good idea. But when you start to look at eBird and all this information at your fingertips, you could also look at that and come up with a game plan and know, okay, how important January is. To me, January was the most important month to be in to start Newfoundland. So that's why I've always started, when I've done anything birding in Newfoundland, it's always been January. That's, to me, the most important, because there's so many lingering birds, a number of rarities, and then there's the mega rarities and the potential of finding stuff. Like on the trip I did in January, I hooked up with a good friend of mine, Bruce McTavish, who was originally from Ottawa back when we were teenagers. But we went out and we found a European common snipe. So stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But get the Eurasian widgeons, the tufted duck, the pink-footed goose, get all that stuff, and get it out of the way. Plus you had, look for alcids, you can get king eider, purple sandpiper. There's a pile of stuff there, which is nice and convenient to get out of the way. And then from there, I just go right to the west coast, to Vancouver Island, and look for all the kind of whatever's rarities were around, and any winter specialties.
Mm-hmm. So you had all these things that you knew where you're going. Did you have a budget, and were you able to stick to it, or was there just a point where you had to throw the budget out the year and just go for the birds?
I had a budget. It wasn't a big budget, but it was pretty good. I pretty well stuck to it. The biggest problem I found was, okay, you're looking at all these birds across Canada, and if you're flying, you can't just book a flight for tomorrow. It's going to be $1,000.
Oh, I know the pain of that. I did it.
So I avoided that plague as best I could and plan everything ahead. And that's what I was saying. So during November and December 2022, while I was just finishing up what I call my accidental big year, I had a good idea what was around, what might linger in January. And so that was very important. And that's where I made a lot of decisions, like to the end of January, early February. And then after that, I didn't want to blow the budget by the end of April. Mm-hmm. So kind of looked at everything, made sure I looked for any of the boreal forest owls. I made sure I got those out of the way as quick as I could. And then come April, again, I knew what the potential was in Newfoundland. If there's going to be a load of stuff from Iceland, whatever, depending on the weather conditions. And also I knew that in Nova Scotia in the springtime, they can get some pretty good birds in the latter part of April, early May. Like some of the southern vagrants that we may get at Pelee, they usually get them. So that's why I went out in the latter part of April. In fact, I originally was going to go to Pelee for the last week of April and hope for some early vagrants. And then once I saw the weather there, I said, forget it. I flew out to Nova Scotia and just went for everything that was around. And then I went to Newfoundland and there was a nice little fall out there. I got two new birds that were lifer for me for North America, the whooper swan. And Bruce and I found a little flock of European golden plovers. And then top it off, northern lapwing shows up and we managed to see it. So that and down around Yarmouth with the snowy egret, probably the same one you saw in December, was still there.
Wow.
And male blue grosbeak out of feeder, cattle egret, just stuff like that. But those are all ones were great to get out of the way. And then I came back home and there's so much to do. Were so much potential in May. I chose Pelee for a couple of weeks. And in the big picture, from compared to, say, the last 5 years at Pelee, going there every spring, it was to me, an average spring. There weren't lots of mega rarities.
Yes, I noticed that in 2023 when I went, because 2022 was, people were saying it was the best Pelee ever was in the last 10, 12 years. And it was certainly the best in 2022 that I ever experienced at Pelee.
Oh yeah, it was definitely one of the best years. There was a couple of really good days in 2022 for sure that were probably the best in, I'd say, 30 years. And then when you threw in like the hepatic tanager and our sandpiper, all with striking distance from Pelee, that's also what made the kind of that general area so hot in 2022. But in last year, it was, I hate to say mediocre, but
comparatively, yes.
It was. And then May was one of those months. We remember the white whitetail at the end of April. There were certain rarities that the golden rule, as soon as you hear about it, you go. Yes. You don't wait next day.
And you went straight from Ottawa for the white wagtail, nonstop?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, from Gananoque. That's where I live now. Mm-hmm. But oh, yeah, and everything you went for, some people go, well, see if it stays for a couple of days, and it does stay for a couple of days, and when you finally go, it's gone.
Yep. I missed the northern lapwing because of where I was at the time. I was on the West Coast and I was just in a position where who knows how many birds I would have missed on the West Coast had I gone for the northern lapwing. And that was when I told myself that if you let that eat at you, it's going to make the rest of the year very difficult. Did you handle that pretty well from that standpoint as well?
Over the decades, okay, I've done big years in Ottawa. I did them from 1971 to 1990. I was like a serious, I loved doing them. Mm-hmm. And you trained yourself, you cannot get upset or disappointed because you might as well just forget about doing a big year. Mm-hmm. Because you have to focus on the big picture. You're not going to get them all. But the thing is, you got to at least try at the right time. If you show up and there's 20 other people there and everybody's looking all day long, and you miss it, hey, you tried. I've had a lot of experience with big years and big days. Yeah, you do a big day, it's all in 24 hours. It's like I said to somebody, a big year is like 365 consecutive big days, because even when you're not out in the field, you're constantly strategizing, thinking about all the possibilities, where to go, what should I do, all of that, even though you're not out. And believe me, you can ask my wife that, because you may be here, but you're not really here.
And Sue felt the same way with me as well. Certainly back in 2012, I wasn't a birder. I did have a job that got me on airplanes to many different locations in the U.S., and that's what made that possible. But I really didn't tell anybody that's what I was going to do. And I certainly didn't know at the time that it was going to be by April all consuming. And once my work season ended in September, that it was going to be traveling virtually every day for the last 3 months of the year. So there is, in addition to the cost of doing the travel, there's a cost to relationships and friends and family life. How did you handle that? Was that something that you had to have a partner that was willing to say, go do your thing? And were there times that you missed family events because big year did take priority?
Yeah, fortunately, my family, because they knew I was passionate for birding, for forever. They understood to a degree, understood. And Lori, my wife, was very understanding, and my kids and all that. There were points where you really had to think, should I do this or shouldn't I? Or is there another opportunity somewhere else? Basically, it was a juggling act. Mm-hmm. You tried to keep peace everywhere, but you knew you needed to get all these birds. Mm-hmm. And then the other, as I say, one of the big constraints is it's how much money you want to spend. Mm-hmm. And when I wasn't willing to get into the, okay, the bird's going to cost me $1,000, then that's not my style. I had no interest in that. Doing it, it was my own personal goal within my means.
And that's the thing. Commitment to the year over everything, including family, is definitely a deciding factor. Yet there's still probably one or two birds that you dropped everything for. For me, it was that darn Stellar Sea Eagle. I knew when I ended up going to Nova Scotia instead of Newfoundland in January that the Sea Eagle was in Maine, which meant I was keeping myself open to drive down to Yarmouth in case it showed up over there. Right. And it didn't. And there were three other times during the year that every time I heard about it, it was really, for me, that was a bird I wasn't going to miss at all. That one I did sacrifice money for. But I also knew every time I made a trip to the East Coast, there was the potential to get other birds. So it wasn't like I was only going for that one bird. Yeah. But it wasn't until November in that year that I was just outside Montreal on a rare bird stakeout. And suddenly I get an email, three texts, someone called me and said the Sea Eagle's in New Brunswick. And I looked at the map. Okay, I'm only 7 hours away. And then I had this drive that took me on an old logging road through northern Quebec and into Brunswick. And it was probably the most terrifying drive I had of the entire year, and made it there for the next morning. We didn't end up seeing it till late in the afternoon, so I was still panicking that it had flown off because of its story and the history of it being in Canada. Yes. And the ridiculous route it took to eventually end up in New Brunswick when I got it made it one of the more satisfying birds of the year. Was that high on your list to get out of the way early? If this shows up, I have to drop everything to get the Sea Eagle?
Yeah, with me, fortunately, back in 2021, it showed up at Gaspé. I just dropped everything on July 11th, drove straight there. And probably that was July 10th. So on July 11th, I was at the spot at 4:30 in the morning, 4:45, all by myself. No one else was there. And I scanned around, didn't see anything. And then suddenly on top of the spruce tree, it was one of those, oh my God, there it is. And I put out an alert and everybody came to see it. So I'd seen it. And then in 2022, I saw you had gotten it. But I had no chance of getting it when it was in New Brunswick. And then in 2023, 2 days after I left Newfoundland in late April, the bird showed up. That was it. And then it took a little while until it settled into Trinity Bay. But again, it was in June. I was doing other things and it was only one bird. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't justify spending that amount of money for one bird. But part of that, and I'm sure, is that I'd seen it in 2021. So I had at least seen one of the rarest birds to show up. I decided that unless I can tie it into a couple of species, two or three species out there, I would have been gone in a flash. But only one, I just couldn't justify it. That's why, and one thing that was interesting in 2023, the East Coast was fantastic for rarities. Mm-hmm. PEI had a swallowtail kite, crested caracara. Then in the fall, we had the gray heron at mm-hmm. Yerim. But I tied all into birds, like two or three birds, at one shot. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like I went there in back in November and there was the tundra bean goose mm-hmm. and the vireo, that type of stuff, definitely. But I just couldn't justify the one bird because, and I know just looking at what I missed last year, I would have had to have made 10 more flights for one bird each time. And most of those flights would have been either to Vancouver, Halifax, or St. John's. And that's, you're talking thousands and thousands.
You had a little bit more priority of targeting every breeding bird in the country. That's where people, when they decide to do something like this, they have to set a priority and say, do I want to get lifers? Do I want to get the record? How do I want to do this? Do I just want to enjoy the travel? And you were in a nice position that you had been everywhere. You knew the places to be at the right time. And for a lot of birders doing it for the first time, that's not going to be possible. So you have to set your sights at something that is doable, but also gives you the potential to at least break or tie a record.
Oh, yeah. When I started the year, I just said, I'm going to aim for 460, see what happens. And as it went, 470, I should be able to get it. And then looked at 480. And then I realized that, 480 is very good chance. I'm going to have to really watch, make the right call. Don't wait forever. And so it turned out. And then when I was back in Ottawa in December, my big year ended on December 7th. Type of bang I wanted, but that ended everything. And knew I accepted it. It's just reality. And if I, again, made the flight out to Vancouver, I would have got the Pinion Jay easily. But so December 17th is it, and it ended.
Tell the story of how that happened. Wait, what? He was about to tell the story of how his big year ended with a whimper rather than a bang. How dare you keep us hanging? This was supposed to be a podcast, not a cliffhanger. Fine, I'll keep this concluding statement short and sweet, as I need to get back to the editing suite and complete part two for your enjoyment and my sanity before the end of the month. I didn't mean to leave you hanging, but I've been a little under the weather the past week, a bit of a cold along with spring allergies, not COVID. I got myself tested. In fact, it's the first cold I've had since before COVID was even a thing. No cold, no flu, no COVID. As always, enjoy the warmer weather and the birds. Remember, do not leave your binoculars on the roof of your car. Be sure your batteries are charged for your camera. Maybe take extra ones. And as always, may the birds be with you.